Hello, everybody. Welcome to the O Jogo Bonito podcast with me, Jay Cron, and we've got our usual panel of Mr. Ferguson and Mr. Jennings. Welcome.
Hello.
Morning.
What should we talk about? So, obviously, the leagues are about to finish. We've got the World Cup in 9 days. Football's getting exciting.
It is getting exciting. I will also be a Debbie Downer and point out it's getting incredibly congested.
Yeah.
I bring this up particularly with regards to Manchester United, who, because they're in the Europa League playoffs now, there's a chance that they now don't have a spare midweek until mid-May,
yeah,
when the World Cup comes back. So that's 2 games a week, every week, for 5 months?
Yeah, it's going to make the top four battle very, very interesting, I think, isn't it? Newcastle fans will be delighted, I suspect, in not only their current form, sitting third in the Premier League after 14 games, even with a game in hand. Manchester United will not, if they win that game, will pip them to third spot currently. And you just think that the longer the season goes on, the number of players that Newcastle have that will not be representing various different nations at the World Cup, if they do maintain current form, makes them a very, very promising chance for that top four spot. So, perhaps a little bit earlier than any of us expected for Newcastle to challenge in that way, but Eddie Howe's job looks like he's doing a superb job.
I think Newcastle have been really great, although the game against Man United, I think we should have had a penalty. Sancho went down, and this is where I think there's a bit of discrepancy with penalties, because people encourage players not to go down, but at the same time, if players do not go down under the challenge, a penalty is rarely given.
Well, I mean, we saw this yesterday with the in the League Cup game with Man United versus Villa, where Rashford had to dance through, I think, 3 tackles. If he'd gone down for any of them, it would have been a penalty.
Right,
and he didn't go. As it happens, he scored at the end of it. So there's not really much talk about it. But he I think it was it Tyrone Mings who slipped. I don't quite remember who it was that slipped on the edge of the 6-yard box right before he was about to take a shot and kind of fell into his path. And if he hits Rashford and he doesn't go down, then it's not going to be given as a penalty. We talk a lot about, you know, how we don't want to see diving and gamesmanship and all these things in football, but the rules kind of reward it.
Yeah, I think so. Something I think has changed on the referee's narrative as well around. We know that VAR is there to help correct what is a clear and obvious error made by the referees, right? And what VAR seems to have done is put a set doubt in the minds of many of the referees now, if not the referees in general, around just what and what isn't a penalty, because we get to see it time and time again, slower and slower and slower on the screen. It's almost as if they're resigning themselves a little bit more now to the idea that, okay, let's just let it go to VAR and I'll review it when I can see it much more closely. We don't see, it certainly doesn't feel as though we're seeing as many penalty decisions being made in the first instance by referees as much as we have done previously.
I think the future of refereeing, especially with the way technology is moving on globally, I think we'll start to have robot refs in the future. Possibly even an algorithm which might be connected, linking the fans, the players, and the managers making decisions.
I'll say something really interesting on that front, actually. I believe it's Microsoft have partnered with, or I forget if it's Microsoft or Amazon, someone, a big data company, has just partnered with the Premier League to do the most in-depth in-game analytics that I think we've ever seen. It's an incredibly, incredibly exciting thing for me, because I adore all kinds of facts, stats, and anything else that can produce lies for me to tell on the internet.
Exciting times, isn't it? Exciting times. I think you got a point there, JK. In terms of on-field officiating, I suppose taking a human being out of that context for the moment will perhaps be a backward step in the eyes of fans, who I think at the moment are hoping to see more involvement with the referee, more communication, more clear, concise communication from referees, like you would get in a rugby setting, for example. That transparency. So whether or not introducing you know, AI and, as you put it, a robot ref at this stage would perhaps just be too much of a step in the other direction in terms of, you know, it's more matter of fact at the moment. There's less transparency around the decisions as to why. Football is like any sport is a very human thing. And so I think that's where VAR is struggling, isn't it? In terms of we're still trying to retain that human feel of the game.
And I think it's worth saying as well, you know, as much as we can quite often rag on the refereeing and VAR and all that, I really like what they've done this year with contact fouls, that they've let so many more of them go. I think that's fantastic, and it really helps the game flow. I just think it's made it more noticeable when there's a VAR hold-up.
Sure, and the offside decision as well, which is now is better, because it's now, if there is a part of your body which you can score with, isn't it, that's beyond the...
Yeah, and they've made the lines thicker for what that matters, you know, it's... But yeah, I think that watching the League Cup game last night actually was really interesting, because it's the first game I've actually been able to sit down and watch since half term started for me.
Right.
And it did. There's no VAR in operation in this round because of the lower league teams that are in. And it did. It flowed so much more. The game, admittedly, was rubbish in the first half.
Right.
But at least it flowed.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Speaking of refereeing decisions, I'm not sure if you've seen Barcelona Osasuna. Lewandowski got sent off. Pique got sent off without even being on the pitch.
In his last game?
Yes. He was arguing with the referee, Gil Manzano, about Lewandowski's first yellow and then the second yellow. Both horrific challenges. I watched it back. Classic Pique fashion. Very outspoken. I think if you go on YouTube, you'll find a clip from El Clasico in either 2021 or 2020. That was the one where Ilaish Moriba hit the bar, and then Modric just makes a backhanded comment at Pique saying, "Oh, how many minutes do you want? How you gonna go speak to the referee now?" Because Pique was annoyed about the added minutes, even though they had about five or six. So I'm not surprised at all, and I'm just excited to see where football goes. Obviously, speaking about La Liga, Real Madrid are now 2 points behind after losing to Valladolid Vallecano and drawing. I think they drew. We'll use the classic device to help us.
Well, while you're looking at that, I'm just going to show Mr. Jennings. I've just found a video of the Lewandowski red card.
Right. Oh, right. Okay, fine.
He's just completely... He's not looking at the ball. He jumped elbow first.
Yeah.
Into the...
It's WWE, isn't it?
It is. That is a flying back elbow. That is not a football tackle.
No, absolutely not.
So I'm... Yeah, that's not surprising. And I'm not surprised that Pique got a red card afterwards, because, you know, what better way is there for him to send off his career?
Absolutely. And that's a good quiz question, actually, for the listeners as well and for ourselves. I'll try and get this. Is how many players saw a straight red in their last ever performance? I mean, I think Gerrard springs to mind, doesn't
it?
Zidane, of course, for France.
Oh. Gerrard did play in the MLS, though. We do forget that.
Oh, did he? It
was his last proper appearance.
I see. Yeah, that's a really good one. We'll have to check that out. But Pique, the most recent by the sounds of things.
As I'm checking the match days, obviously, Real Madrid lost against Vallecano, poor performance, and then drew against Girona. So 6 points, it was 5 points dropped there, and Barcelona now in the lead. So La Liga's getting more interesting. One league which is not getting more interesting is the Bundesliga. Union Berlin lost to Leverkusen 5-0. Xabi Alonso's big break. Is it the start of a Leverkusen comeback? We don't know. But Bayern Munich are now, as expected, top of the Bundesliga. We all predicted it. So let's see how that goes. I'm interested to see what happens as well in the Champions League, which we'll get onto in a minute. Just rounding off the other couple of leagues, Napoli, 8 points clear, ridiculously consistent. I think they've won 10 games in a row.
Can I jump in there, JK, about the Napoli-Liverpool game, or the Liverpool-Napoli game as it was last week? It was a super... Did you guys see the game?
I was not. I was actually in Seville at the time.
Of course.
So, which was strange to see how many Betis fans there were there rather than Seville fans. But anyway, yes.
Sure. The game was played in the highest of spirits. You had two teams who were had already qualified for the next round of the group. You had two teams who were not going to interchange positions. It was always going to be Napoli top, Liverpool second. Both sides played and fielded their strongest teams, I think. And Liverpool won the game 2-0, getting two very, very late on goals, I think. Both very similar, coming from corners. But just as a side point there, it's too often in those scenarios do we see, which I think I probably would suggest is the better decision, actually, is to give youth and the less experienced players an opportunity to go out in a depressurized environment and actually get some on-field experience in that setting. It's a big Champions League game, last in the group against a major competitor in another league. But both teams just went for it. And it was a fantastic game of football that could have gone either way. Ozinheim, is it?
Osman, yes.
Osman, the striker. First time I've really watched him play as well. And despite not really getting a chance at goal, he is a handful. Energetic, physical, relentless in his energy and running around. I mean, he looks like, if he can finish as well as the stats say he can, he looks like a real player.
I don't think he may have played, but I also like Kvaratskhelia a lot, because he can go either side, left. He can go down the wing on the left, and he can also cut inside. And he beats players with skill rather than pace. And he's been a real weapon in the Napoli side. They've got some depth. They've got Giovanni Simeone, son of Diego. At least one Simeone family member is actually doing well this season. They've got Raspadori, who can play that nine in a bit. He's more of a second striker, in my opinion. He can also play off the left. So on the right, they've got Politano and Lozano. So Napoli have got some real good depth. In terms of the wider Serie A, Milan dropping points against Cremonese was not great to see. I think Di Catellara has not settled in very well. And Pioli's really got to try and supercharge the attack. If Rafael Leão is not on form, obviously they've got Giroud, who's got a second yellow for taking his shirt off after scoring the late winner. I think he forgot that he was on a yellow.
Do you think he forgot, or do you think he didn't care?
I think he forgot, because against Cremonese, they weren't very good. So if they had Giroud there, he might have got a goal.
Yeah, but it looks great for the photos when you get to, you know, do an Aguero and take your shirt off and whip it around your head as you're celebrating the winning goal.
I'd rather just see the player keep his shirt on and play the next game. In football, it's great to see the passion, but at the same time, it's a results-based industry. So if I was Pioli, I would not be best pleased. But at the same time, Inter won 6-1 against Bologna in midweek. Juventus won 1-0 last night. Atalanta dropping wins against Lecce, losing 2-1, was very disappointing, because Juventus, despite being absolutely horrible this season, have snuck him back into the top four. So that just tells you something. Maybe we have a Calciopoli 2.0, but you didn't hear that from me. One thing I do also want to touch on is Benfica. Wonderful side. Absolutely wonderful side. Still unbeaten. They beat Estoril 1-0 in the Taça de Portugal. They beat Estoril last weekend 5-0 as well. And they're drawing against Club Brugge in the Champions League. Obviously finished top ahead of PSG on goals scored away from home.
That was the sixth, seventh tiebreaker, was that?
Yep, seventh tiebreaker. So I think this side, I'm tipping Benfica as my dark horses to go to the semis. Let's see if they can get past Club Bruges, if they possibly can even get Porto. I'd love to see an El Clasico in the quarterfinals. Quick reaction to Champions League draw, Europa League draw. What are your thoughts? Obviously, Man United got Barcelona. I'm excited for that. I'd love to see Man United dump Barcelona out of the Europa League. Frankie at Old Trafford, he's going to get booed. Rightly or wrongly, not sure about that. But thoughts on the Champions League ties?
Do you think he is going to get booed? I still think there's a sizable part of the United fan base who want to see him at Old Trafford.
I don't think it's going to happen anymore, which is in many ways very sad, because I think Erik ten Hag would have and probably still would have.
Imagine, you know, having having Frankie de Jong next as your starting centre mid, and having Eriksen as depth at centre mid.
Yeah, I think it's a lovely shout. I'd be very surprised if it happened now, following the signing of Casemiro as well. It's not what I want to say, but I think that our priorities now have changed.
Mm.
I think it will be a striker, probably a right back. Anyway, sorry, back to your point about the draw. What do you think, Mr. Ferguson? What are you pleased about?
I mean, obviously, United Barcelona is, strangely, it's probably the glamour tie across both competitions.
Yeah, I agree.
I get the feeling they're going to be really good games. Because neither side is particularly terrific defensively.
Exactly.
And I believe Martinez for United is suspended for the first leg because of yellow card accumulation. There were some card decisions I don't agree with in that last game.
Yeah.
That tackle, I use in inverted commas, was one of them.
Mm.
So I think defensively, neither side is going to be particularly strong.
Yeah.
How soon are these games being played after we come back from the World Cup?
I think these are in early February.
So plenty of time to gel back into the club again. I think we could see fireworks there. I think particularly on the United side, actually, because they have something to play for, having lost to Barcelona. Is it each of the last two times they've played them in the Champions League finals, 09 and 11?
They do. The classic Paul Merson tactic of getting both sides in front of you and picking a combined first 11 in terms of who's got the better starting 11, who gets in each other's sides, all that sort of stuff, I think is actually quite a nice way of trying to build up an idea of who's got the better chance, where I think Man United's back four and goalkeeper trump Barcelona's. The back five in general, I think, is just better. So I don't think we've got an issue there at all. That is assuming Varane and Martinez are fit, I should probably add at that point. Moving further forward, and you look at the front three, I think Lewandowski is better than Ronaldo at this stage of his career.
Oh, undoubtedly.
But when you look in the wide areas, I think this is where Man United probably have got a bit of a shout. I think Antony is a player. I think Rashford on form is a player. It's in central midfield, which is so often where the games are won and lost, that we've got to be careful. Casemiro, for me, probably the best top three in the world in his position. So I think this is quite a bold thing to say, maybe a little bit, you know, pessimistic as well, following what happened over the summer. But I'm going to say he is a better option than Frankie de Jong if we look at him as a holding midfield player. It's whether or not there's an argument for Frank Kessié or Busquets as being.
Kessié doesn't get into the team. I think Barcelona's strongest midfield is de Jong, Pedri, and Gavi.
Right.
And
who does the defensively minded role in that three, JK?
I'd say Gavi wins the ball a lot. He's one of the only players I've seen who speeds up going into the tackle. So he doesn't really pull out of many challenges. De Jong would do a lot of the ball progression and the defensive work. And Pedri's there as the creator. I also want to touch on, you made a really good point about Barcelona's front three. A lot of them prefer playing on the right side. Dembele, Rafinha, Ferran Torres. So the only Memphis Depay might even be going in January. So the only player who likes to play on the left for Barcelona is Ansu Fati, and he's very injury prone. And Xavi's got a dilemma here, because you either play Rafinha, who's probably better tactically to maneuver, or you play Ousmane Dembele, who is more of a creator on that right-hand side. And you can't play both of them together, as seen in the El Clasico when they lost 3-1 to Real Madrid. Because if you put either one of them on the left, they're ineffective because they can't cut in. So as gestured to me, we've got the other Champions League draws. We've got PSG Bayern Munich. What are your thoughts on that? Very quickly.
Blimey, the final. Or you and I had this conversation with the show before, didn't we, JK, where we voted, and I think you had Bayern Munich that year, and I had PSG. As I said a few weeks ago now, I'm not going to change my predictions at this stage. I think PSG will win the Champions League this year, purely based on the fact that if they don't win it this year, I don't suspect they will for a while, because I don't think they'll hang on to some of their better players for too much longer. So I'll go PSG.
Yeah, I'm looking at that, and you know, the standout ties here. There's three standout ties in the Champions League. There's PSG Bayern. There's Liverpool Madrid, obviously repeat of last year's final.
Wow.
And there's Dortmund Chelsea,
mm-hmm.
Which I think, although the clubs aren't as good as the other four, I think will still be a fantastic game.
Yeah, and Chelsea.
They're the ones I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to back. I'm just going to do a quick who we're going to back to go through. In Milan-Tottenham, I think I'm going to back Milan to go through, because I think they might strengthen in January. They need a striker. I do think Spurs are not great. Conte has a very poor record in Europe. So does Pioli. But
Kane's a worry. And I mean that from an England perspective as well. Whether he was taken off as a precaution a couple of nights ago, but that was a little bit alarming to see him go off.
Do you think that Callum Wilson's been included in the England squad as in case Kane isn't fit anymore?
Well, you know, England squads of old, we would always take five strikers, wouldn't we? Do you remember? And so I'm not surprised to see the variety that we have. Kane is the best in his position in world football on his day. And I mean that as an out-and-out nine. And so when we talk about England's world-class players, I think we look at Kane as being one of, if not the only. Foden still feels a bit young to be talking about a world-class player, but I would describe Foden as a world-class talent, certainly.
I think he's established himself as levels above Mason Mount.
Yes, completely. I do wonder what Mason Mount's position is at times, where he plays. But I think he's a good utility player to have in that squad. Mm. So I worry about Kane, JK.
Just to nudge you back into the Champions League direction.
Yes.
Obviously, we've gone PSG, Bayern Munich. I'm going to back PSG as well. So we're all in favour of Les Parisiens. Club Bruges, Benfica. I'm going to stick with Benfica, I think.
Agreed.
I've seen a lot of them this season. And they've got good depth. David Neres in particular on the right is very, very exciting. His renaissance under Roger Schmidt. I want to highlight Enzo Fernandez though. Signed from River Plate for €8 million. Absolutely amazing midfielder. Does everything. Wins the ball. Plays great at moving the ball. Shooting. And he's very robust. And I like that about him. He does wear the number 13. So it's unlucky for some. But I do think whoever doesn't get Jude Bellingham this summer will get Enzo Fernandez. Dortmund-Chelsea. I think I'm going to back Dortmund on this one. My dark horse is to beat Chelsea. I don't think Chelsea have enough in attack. It's a bit dysfunctional. But
I love myself some Dortmund, but I think Chelsea have got this one. I think they're just, as we say goodbye to Mr. Jennings, as he has to dash off to do that dastardly teaching.
Frankfurt-Napoli, I'm going to back Napoli. I think it's a relatively easy tie for them. Liverpool-Real Madrid, I'm going to stick to Real Madrid. I think despite the defensive, as Ancelotti would describe, a lack of defensive intensity, I still back Real Madrid because I think Tchouaméni, Kroos, Modric is a much better midfield than what Liverpool are working with. I think Vinicius, Benzema and Rodrigo, or Valverde, who can somehow play four positions at once, is a better front three. And I think their defence is also particularly better. I think the only area where Liverpool are better is probably in goal, because Thibaut Courtois made that mistake against Cadiz last night, which led to their goal. He parried a shot straight into striker's path, made another save, and then Lucas Perez, formerly of Arsenal, puts in the top corner. So
it's interesting. In years gone by, I would have said Liverpool on this one because I do think they're a better team than Madrid at this point in time, as much as it breaks my heart to say that. But I think this season, I think they now actually have a bit of Madrid in them, in that they have the potential to just have an off night, a really off night. And previously, that wouldn't have been so bad for Liverpool because they had enough team cohesion to get through a bad night. I don't think they do at the moment. And for that reason, I'm backing Madrid.
I completely agree. Leipzig-Man City. Now, I think this is going to be an underrated goal fest. Leipzig under Marco Rosa, formerly of Dortmund.
It's interesting. City are, you know, you look at that tie and you expect City to steamroll Leipzig. But Leipzig have done really well in Champions League knockout games in the past. They've been good. They've been really, really not just solid, but creative as well. They've not been afraid to take risks and play positive football. You're right. I think this could be a really fantastic tie.
It's the Red Bull way. Obviously, our condolences go out to his family. The death of the Red Bull owner. I cannot pronounce the name. But I'll just leave it at that. Maybe there's uncertainty for the Red Bull group, but Leipzig have ridiculous amount of attacking depth. Nkunku, Szoboszlai, Timo Werner. It's more. Olmo. Lots of attacking midfielders who can also play up front. Andre Silva as well, lest I forget. And those attacking midfielders, those creative midfielders, are backed up by Konrad Leimer, who could leave on a free this summer. They've got a solid defence. I think they've got Simakon, still got Willy Orban, Holstenberg, Klosterman.
I really like Klosterman.
So I think Leipzig-Man City is going to be a great game. Both teams love to press. And contrary to popular belief, pressing isn't just running around like headless chickens for 90 minutes. It's calculated. You have to cut out passing lanes, etc.
If you want a really good analysis of pressing, is it NBC who've got the Thierry Henry in their coverage?
CBS.
CBS, thank you. Thierry Henry does a really great little feature on pressing in one of their most recent bits of Champions League coverage. Really recommend seeking that out.
Inter Porto, I think this tie could go either way. I think Inter are very inconsistent, possibly having showdown talks with Simone Inzaghi. Let's see who might be filling that void if he does indeed leave. I think this tie really suits Porto because I've watched a lot of Porto recently because either I've been bored at home and then just put on BT Sport or Premier Play, which is now going to be Via Play. And Porto are a very interesting side. They remind me a lot of, they'd finish mid-table in the Premier League. So essentially a mid-table Premier League side. But they've got a right-back. They've got Pepe Aquino, who they signed from Gremio, I believe, who's a right-winger now playing a full-back due to injuries. And he's a very interesting player. So do watch out for him. But Porto are a very cohesive unit. I'm not going to compare them to Burnley of old because I think that would be slightly disrespectful. But I could see Inter losing because both teams, especially Inter, let's see what happens with Lukaku. But
I have Porto down as more of a Champions League specialist than Inter, to be honest with you. And for that reason, I'm picking Porto on this one. I fully acknowledge that Inter probably on paper have the stronger squad, but Porto, I would be more scared as a United fan going up against Porto in a Champions League knockout game than I would against Inter. And I think that informs my decision-making here.
I agree. Quickly, before we end the show, this segment of the show, and before going to our reacting to our predictions and making some for the games this weekend, let's talk about our breakthrough player of the season so far, of this half season, and a underrated player or team, Mr. Ferguson.
Well, I think if we're talking breakthrough, it feels slightly strange to talk about a breakthrough player who's only played two or three games in the Premier League this season, but Alejandro Garnacho has been sensational in the last couple of games. I do think his League Cup appearance last night was his best appearance, but he has still been fantastic. He's been so, so great. Of course, you have to mention Erling Haaland, who will win Manchester City the league this season. And I think that's almost undoubted at this point. Dan Byrne, I think, actually. I'm going to throw Dan Byrne in there as well. Not that he wasn't underrated before, but I think it's taken to another level this season. When you look at how many people are disappointed he didn't make the England squad, which was announced yesterday, I think it shows just what a wonderful job he's been doing so far.
I'd be inclined to agree. If we were taking a more European view, I'd go for, in terms of my breakthrough player, I didn't really watch much of him before, but I really liked Rafa Silva. I think Rafa Silva's gone up another gear this season. While I do like Gonçalo Ramos as well at Benfica, I do think he lacks the nasty streak, and I'm being very 80s, 90s in my opinion here, to be a clinical striker. I prefer Enrique Araujo, who's coming through as well. Very a poacher-esque, possibly some might call him the Portuguese Haaland. But Benfica wouldn't be my underrated team. In terms of breakthrough player, obviously you've got Kvaratskhelia at Napoli. I'm going to go for Matthias Tell at Bayern Munich. He's had limited minutes, but he's really impressed me with his maturity. And at 17, playing in that Bayern Munich side, coming in for 30 million from Stade Rennais, he's just really impressed me. I think one team to watch out for the next half season would be, in my opinion, Bayer Leverkusen, just to see how they do under Xabi Alonso, out of pure curiosity. Leipzig as well. In terms of a team I do not back to do very well, I think Atletico Madrid are going to struggle again. Betis might even get top four. Real Sociedad are doing well as well. So it's going to be very interesting. Now, predictions. I did pip Mr. Ferguson on our last episode by one result, I believe.
Yes, you did. We both got one correct score. They were different scores that we got correct. So your correct score was going 3-1 for Real Madrid versus Seville. My correct score was the 1-1 draw between Southampton and Arsenal. Obviously, neither of us predicted Nottingham Forest to beat Liverpool in the yes. early kickoff. And we also didn't predict Everton to beat Crystal Palace. You got close to predicting a draw. I predicted a Palace win. Mm. We both got the City-Brighton game. We were both off by one goal each, actually. Yep. There were quite a few of those results going on around the place. The one that swung it for you was predicting correctly that Chelsea versus Man United was going to end in a draw.
I didn't predict the 1-1, but I did predict the 2-2. So, actually, I could have seen in hindsight. Both are very goal-shy sides, in my opinion.
Mm.
So this weekend's fixtures, Man City, Brentford, just going to a quick run through, Mr. Mm-hmm. Ferguson.
You've got to pick City. You just have to pick City, and I'm going to give them, as I pull up our spreadsheet for tracking all of these things, I'm going to give them a 4-0 here, I think. No, that's disrespectful, a 4-1.
I'm going to go 5-0 City. I'm going to start off with Bournemouth Everton, obviously a rematch of the EFL Cup tie in midweek. I'm going to go 2 on Bournemouth. I think Kiefer Moore's going to get a goal. So what are your thoughts, Mr. Ferguson?
2-1 Bournemouth, was that?
Yes.
I have been burned once from not picking Everton. I'm going to try and back him this time. I'm going to see how that does for me. I'm going 2-1 Everton.
Next up, Mr. Ferguson, West Ham Leicester.
West Ham Leicester. Battle of two teams, so I cannot ever predict how they're going to do at any given point in time. This one, I'm going to go with home advantage for this one because I've really got not much else to go on. So I'm going to go 2-0 West Ham.
I'm going to go 1-1 just because I don't really...
They're strange teams this season. Yeah. You can't predict how they're going to do.
Tottenham Leeds. I'm going to take this one. I'm backing a 2-1 Leeds victory.
Interesting, an away victory for Leeds.
They've done it at Anfield.
That's true, they have. And Leeds are playing better this season. Spurs always have a tendency to be Spursy. There's a reason that word exists. But I do think they've got enough to see this through. I'm going to give them a... what do I think this is going to be? I think this could be quite high scoring. I'm going to go 3-2 Tottenham.
Interesting. Forest Palace.
Is the bounce ability strong enough for Forest? I don't think it is. I think they're going to go down 1-0. So Palace win 1-0.
I'm going to go 1-0 Forest.
Okay.
Liverpool Southampton.
Mm-hmm.
So Liverpool versus their academy. classic joke there.
Yeah.
New manager Nathan Jones. Don't know what to expect. I'm going to go 2-1 Southampton.
On Southampton. I was going to say that's a surprising result, but actually I think Southampton could be tricky on this particular fixture, especially as I said, as Liverpool have more of a tendency to not get results when they play badly this season. I'm going to go for 1-1 here though.
And Newcastle Chelsea, Mr. Ferguson.
I think Newcastle have got this one. I think they are in such a rich vein of form at the moment. I really, really like where they're going. And I think this could be... I'm not sure Chelsea will have their heads back in the game after the League Cup debacle. I'm thinking of Everton because I'm thinking of Frank Lampard. but that does slightly change. I still think Newcastle are going to win, but I'm going to go 2-0 Newcastle.
I'm going to go 1-0 Newcastle.
Okay.
Wolves-Arsenal. I think this is going to be an easy Arsenal win. I'm going to go 2-0.
You've got 2-0 Arsenal. I do like me some Wolves. It's where I was born. But yeah, Arsenal have got this. I think they've got it 3-0.
Quick European view, Napoli-Udinese, I think that is first versus eighth. I'm going to go 3-1 Napoli.
Yeah, I think it's daft to back against Napoli. I'm gonna have them actually 3-0.
Quick Bundesliga check, Schalke-Bayern Munich. So Schalke are bottom of the Bundesliga. I'm going to go 4-1 Bayern.
I don't think it's going to be that comfortable, but I'm going to give them a 2-0. So 2-0 Bayern win.
Quick view. I'm just going to check what's happening in Ligue 1. We've got Lyon-Nice tonight.
Ooh, Lyon-Nice is always a good game, in my opinion. I like watching that. But for me...
Lyon, I've got Laurent Blanc as manager, by the way. New system, 3-5-2. I think I'm going to back Lyon. I think they're going to go 2-1. Hopefully Ryan Cherki will be trusted. So
I think I'll follow you on a Lyon win as I fight the spreadsheet because it's trying to change all of my data. you've got Lyon as 2-1. I think I've got Lyon and I've got them. I think I've only got them 1-0 though.
Monaco Marseille. I'm going to back. I'm going to go for a draw on this one. I'm going to go 1-1.
As I quickly rush to a different note taking software now. So that's Monaco Marseille. And you've got that 1-1.
Yes.
Monaco Marseille 1, JK 1-1. Mr. Ferguson. Mr. Ferguson has that at. I think that's going to be. I think I back Marseille to get an away win here, actually. I'm going to give them a 2-1 away from home.
Quick rejig back to Serie A. Atalanta Inter on Sunday at 11:30. I'm going to go 2-1 Inter. I don't think Atalanta have got it in them. Inter getting back on form. Contrary to what I said about them in the Champions League, I'm going to go 2-1 Inter on that one.
Sorry, remind me of that fixture because I've.
Atalanta Inter.
Atalanta Inter. I love Atalanta. I really like them as a side, but I think Inter have got this one. So you had
2-1.
2-1 Inter. I think it's going to be 3-1 actually.
At the 5 o'clock kickoff, Milan Fiorentina. Fiorentina, I believe, are 10th. Milan, I think, are 3rd. I'm going to go, obviously, they had a 4-3 game last season. I'm going to go 3-2 Milan.
I think Fiorentina could potentially pull something off here. They're a side that always has a surprise in them at some point. And I think they might have one here. I think they'll scrape it if they get it. I think it'll be 1-0.
Juventus-Lazio, quarter to eight, kickoff. I'm actually going to back the Laziali here. I'm going to go 2-1 Lazio. Maurizio Sarri going back to Juventus. I think they're going to win.
Interesting. And Lazio aren't as small a team as people think they are. They're a good team. Having said that, I still think Juventus have got it, and I think they've got it 2-0.
Moving on to coming back to the Premier League for our last prediction, Fulham Manchester United.
I have no clue, honestly. I don't know what to expect from this match. Strangely, I think this will depend on how Aaron Wan-Bissaka plays.
The predicted 11 has Tyrell Malacia replacing Diogo Dalot.
Right back. Okay. I don't know if that makes you feel more or less confident.
I'd say more confident. I'm going to jump in here. I think it's going to be a 2-1 Manchester United win.
I don't feel confident about it, but I'm going to say... I actually think this could be a pretty rubbish game because I think a lot of players will be saving them for the World Cup. So I think it's going to be 1-0 United.
There you have it, folks. The end of another episode of the Ojogo Bonito podcast. Tune in next week where we will discuss international squads. That's been your host, Jake Ron. Thank you very much and peace.